This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz, and the Seahawks, they've stayed put. They've made their pick in the first round. It's the first time they've done it since, gosh, what was it, 2011, I think they were talking about, that the Seahawks have actually stayed put and taken their pick in the first round, not gone back and gotten any extra picks. And while they've done it, they stayed put to take a linebacker, probably not a position that we talked a whole lot about in the offseason. And so I'm bringing on my resident expert who I go to when I don't know a player that the Seahawks pick. I'm going to Seahawks Draft Blog and Mr. Rob Staton. Rob, I am glad to have you on because we talked about linebackers. And we probably, you know, Patrick Queen, a linebacker who went off the board one pick after the Seahawks at 28 to the Ravens. I think we expected him to go a lot sooner, so probably not a guy that we would have talked about anyway. But now the Seahawks have taken Jordan Brooks out of Texas Tech with pick number 27.
Yeah, I just don't get the pick at all. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I sincerely hope that he goes on to have a fantastic career in Seattle, of course. And I hope in a few years' time we're looking back on this pick in the same way that we look back on, you know, when it was a little bit confusing for some people, you know, not, you know, I was going to compare it to 2012 then, but then when you look at 2012, Bruce Irvin was the best pass rusher in college football for 2 years. He was very athletic. Bobby Wagner was incredibly athletic, and Russell Wilson, you know, was a great pick as well. And you could make sense of the upside of it, right, even if the names were not necessarily the ones that the media were touting. With this, I don't get it on any level whatsoever. You know, the Seahawks ended last season with a huge issue with their pass rush. And on the other side of the ball, you know, they could have done with more weapons for Russell Wilson and at least some long-term planning, you could say, for the offensive line. And now here we are, and they've spent the vast majority of their cap space is gone now. The first round pick has gone. They didn't trade down to acquire extra picks. They've used their first round picks, so they're not going to pick again now to the end of round two. And it feels like none of those needs have been addressed. The pass rush is worse because they've lost their best player, or at least he remains unsigned in Jadeveon Clowney. They've lost Quinton Jefferson and brought in Benson Mayowa and Bruce Irvin. Bruce Irvin's going to be, what, 33, 34 this year? Benson Mayowa, very much a journeyman. So that's not been solved. Offensively now, yeah, they've got these 18 offensive linemen on the roster, but can anybody say with any conviction that the offensive line is going to be improved for all of these additions? Many of them, people like Chance Womack, they were retired last year and are going to come back now. And is Brandon Shell better than Jermaine Ifedi? Or if he is better, is he noticeably better that you're going to see an uptick in improvement on the offense? I don't get it from that level. The other thing I don't understand is it would have been financially beneficial to part ways with KJ Wright a few weeks ago. But they opted not to do that. They retained him to the point where now I think it would actually cost them money to do it now versus doing it earlier. A year ago, they traded up in round three for Cody Barton. They drafted Ben Burke-Irvin. They re-signed Bobby Wagner. They made a serious investment in the linebacker position. And now they spend a first-round pick on Jordan Brooks. Now, if this is your weak side linebacker of the future because KJ Wright's coming to the end of his career, is that really a good use of resources for the linebacker position? That's a questionable thing. I mean, it's not even questionable. It's just not, actually. Let's just call it as it is. It's not a wise decision, that. So where's he going to play in year one, assuming that Wright stays on the roster? Is he replacing Kendricks? Are they still going to persevere with this base defense with three linebackers on the field? And if so, is that worth spending a third-round pick? No. It just doesn't fit in. What does the future hold for Cody Barton now? How does this improve the team? And then you go and have a look at, because I've not studied him enough. I mean, I've watched very brief bits of him, not enough to have a proper, full, critical opinion of Jordan Brooks, and I need to go and watch some tape immediately to get a proper angle on him. But I went and read Lance Zierlin's review, and the first thing amongst the negatives was that he didn't play very well against Oklahoma, which is the best team in the Big 12, and he was gassed in the second half against the high-octane Oklahoma defense, which is concerning because he's not going to have a proper off-season program that he otherwise would do because of coronavirus. And the Seahawks are in a division with two of the most high-octane pro offenses, with the Rams and the 49ers, and they have to defend Kyler Murray. So I just have a real hard time working out what the thought process is with this pick. And I'm sure we can talk about some of the other players that they could have drafted as an alternative, and we may touch on that briefly as well. But on the day when the Arizona Cardinals added Isaiah Simmons and the Niners replaced DeForest Buckner with somebody who could be better and is cheaper for the next 4 or 5 years, and then went and got Brandon Ayuk, who is fantastic, to sort of sit here and reflect on what the Seahawks are doing to try and throw a counterpunch, I'm struggling with it, Brandon.
Yeah, you know, that was a big frustration as we watched and live streamed with our members of the flock in our Facebook group. When the Carolina Panthers didn't take Isaiah Simmons and he was on the board for the Cardinals, we were all just discussing amongst ourselves, please don't take Simmons, please don't take Simmons. And of course, the Arizona Cardinals do that. And, you know, when the 49ers were up, we're like, okay, well, maybe they take a receiver, okay. But then they go and get Javon Kinlaw, and then they get the receiver later with Ayuk. And it was tough to watch as a rival fan, see what some of those other teams do. And then there are so many different ways where I could have, at the end of the day, said with, you know, offensive line, especially tackle, that would have made a whole lot of sense to me. Defensive pass rushers. I know we talked about how those guys don't, you know, there are a lot of players that weren't all that exciting in terms of edge rushers and maybe wouldn't even contributed right away either, but you could understand it with it being a need for the team. And, you know, even at running back, with watching the Chiefs go with Clyde Edwards-Helaire was still on the board. They could have had their pick of any of the running backs and gotten really an impact player there, which we talked about was we could have seen, especially considering the injuries to Penny and Carson being on the last year of his deal.
I don't understand it. If this is to replace Michael Kendricks, it's just incredible. Look, this team needs a defensive tackle badly. It needs pass rush off. It needs speed and quickness off the edge badly. It needs talent on, you know, it just needs talent on that defensive line. They've not done that at all in free agency or now with their first round pick. You know, on offense, there are players in this draft, you know, whether it was there were offensive linemen available. Isaiah Wilson was there who could have come in and competed. Brandon Shell, Ezra Cleveland was there. If you want a left tackle of the future or whatever, Josh Jones, you know, that would have made some sense. You know, if you're going to go down that road, at least you can sort of work out why. There are still receivers on the board who would have been very interesting. Denzel Mims, for example, Chase Claypool. There's a number of receivers, and look at them, they'll might wait on that position, that's fine. They have a couple of good receivers, they've signed Dorsett, fine.
Let's talk about the one guy that came off the board right after him, because, like I said, I don't think we talked about the idea of Patrick Queen still being on the board at the end of the first round, and the fact that the Seahawks take Jordan Brooks, and then Patrick Queen comes off the board right after. These are two players now that are going to be linked, especially in the minds of Seahawks fans, as they're going to go, well, what's that linebacker doing over for Baltimore right now?
Yeah, you were going to watch him all the way through. And, you know, Patrick Queen is a good player. And, you know, I have watched a bit more of him because I've seen a lot of LSU. He's a really good player and, you know, was graded amongst the top players in the draft. And, you know, the Baltimore Ravens get him at 28. And the other thing is that I don't get, Brandon, is the one conference in all of college football that has atrocious play on defense is the Big 12. You know, the Seahawks have spent their last two first-round picks on Big 12 defenders. It's a really confusing proposition. It really is. I just don't see what the plan is. You know, it seemed quite clear going into this offseason that the plan was you've got cap space and you've got picks. There are defensive linemen in free agency. Go and make sure that your pass rush is fixed, and then go into the draft. You know, to tap into the real quality at the top of the draft, which was offensive tackle and receiver and running back. And they've not done any of those things. They've not fixed the pass rush. It's a huge, stonking, glaring need. They've not addressed any of the other needs in this first pick. And look, there are still picks to come. There's still good players on the board. And, you know, by tomorrow, we might have a very different opinion on this. I just can't. Look, eventually, you've just got to ask the question, are they being a bit too clever? You know, are they looking for their guys and they're showing all this confidence that we're going to go and find the guys that we want, tick these boxes, and we're going to go and do that? that hasn't worked. They've not drafted and developed well enough. You know, the players that they're drafting to develop are not, they're not developing them. Their early picks are not coming in and having the impact. And when you have players available who you think, look, you know, they've just got massive upside, they could just come in and they've got huge ceilings the way that DK Metcalf had a year ago. And I would have thought, looking at last year, they would have thought, we drafted LJ Collier with some limitations and we took him because we needed him, Big 12 defender and all of that. And we'll learn from that because clearly the best pick for the Seahawks last year was DK Metcalf amongst the early ones that they had. And he was this huge upside, high ceiling guy, which is generally what they were taking in the early years of the right. Carroll regime early in the draft. And they've not done that. They've not gone for the Isaiah Wilson, who was massive and explosive. They've not gone for the Patrick Queen, who was really quick. They've not gone for the Jonathan Taylor or the Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who were just incredibly fast and explosive and brilliant. They've not gone for a Denzel Mims or a Chase Claypool. They've gone for a linebacker who, yeah, he runs a 4.53, but, you know, I'm reading a report here from Lance Erlein saying that he was gassed in the second half against Oklahoma.
And let's go down that path a little bit too, because one of the things that that's in the Pro Football Focus draft guide with regard to Jordan Brooks is that he was on the 4x100 relay team in his high school. And so it's a guy, he is a guy who has speed, but do you think he has, and one of the things with him, we don't have his, all of his scores, all of his combine scores that gives him, you know, like the spark type athlete numbers, you know, Willie Gay and Isaiah Simmons, we talked about how those were the two guys, and we don't really have a reference with regard to Jordan Brooks that would say that it puts him up with those types of guys, because we really only have that 4.5 40 yard time. We don't have the shuttle, the three cone, and some of those other numbers.
I mean, we don't have any of those numbers. Can I just remember how important is that? Do they genuinely think the linebacker position is in the modern game? I mean, a lot of people laugh about the running back value and stuff like that. The Seahawks are spending tens of millions of dollars on Bobby Wagner. They're paying, as things stand, KJ Wright about $10, $11 million to be on the roster this year. He's like in the top five for salary. They now have a first round pick salary to add to that. They have Cody Barton. They have Ben Burkervin. They've got Shaquem Griffin. Why do they feel the need to have all of these linebackers?
That's a good question.
When they were winning the championships, they had a loaded secondary and a brilliant defensive line. And yeah, they had the two guys in the middle, but they'd fit Bruce Irvin in. If people forget this, but Malcolm Smith had like usurped Bruce Irvin in 2013. And, you know, they've kind of just played a lot of nickel since then and stuff like that. All of a sudden now there's this huge, you know, the Seahawks are spending more on the linebacker position probably than any team in the league. And yet that's fine if you have young, cheap talent in the key areas, but they don't. You know, they've got a left tackle who may play another couple of years, may not. They don't have a defensive line to speak of. They don't have the brilliant secondary that they used to have. There are still major improvements that could be made to the offense to get even better. It just is a really difficult pick to work out. And they've got so much they need to do.
You know, it's funny. I'm looking more at this Pro Football Focus guide, and it does take me to Ken Norton Jr. and with him being the defensive coordinator. And just the way this starts off, it says 20 years ago, a player like Brooks would have been firmly in the first round conversation. 20 years ago.
I
think that's funny the way it starts off, just considering what you just said with regard to the linebacker valuation.
The problem with stuff like this is like the immediate reaction is often, you know, when you have a pick like this, it is to be very negative about it and stuff like that. And especially, I mean, I haven't watched him. I mean, I watched him a little bit. I've got to say, I wasn't particularly enamored with the little bit that I did watch, but I've got to give him a fair crack, and I will go and watch a bit more of him and try and get a better idea of what he is. But I felt like, you know, like a year ago, I'd written a lot about LJ Collier and they desperately needed a defensive lineman. So you could say, well, then they needed a defensive lineman, and maybe they have reached for a defensive lineman, but that was their biggest need, having traded Frank Clark away. Here's what we know about LJ Collier to sort of explain the thought process with this pick. And then a year ago, before that, we could do the same with Rashad Penny, and we could do the same with Malik McDowell. this, for the first time, really for me, is a pick where I just can't work out the need. You know, what is the fit? The Seahawks are not in. It's not 2013 anymore. They've not got this luxury to just go and, like, they spent their first pick on Christian Michael that year just because they could. You know, it was like they've not got that now. You know, we're going to draft Jordan Brooks to be the heir apparent to KJ Wright or a replacement for Michael Kendricks. They're not in. They don't have that luxury now. They're not good in certain areas. And look, hopefully he comes in and helps raise the defensive performance, because boy, do they need raising. But they needed raising in hurries, pressures, sacks, tackles for a loss. Maybe you can help there. Better tackling, defending the perimeter better. And I just think swapping him in for KJ Wright, if that's what it is, or swapping him in for Michael Kendricks, I just find that particularly confusing. And you know, you run through the list of teams and, you know, I bet the Chiefs fans are stoked right now. You know, they're getting Big Clyde, and, you know, the Cowboys fans will be happy because they've got CD Lamb, and the Niners fans will be really happy with what they've done. And I bet the Cardinals fans who spent a couple of hours watching Isaiah Simmons highlights on YouTube. And for me, for the Seahawks fans, there's just questions. Why? You know, what's the plan? What actually is the plan here to get this team back to the Super Bowl? What, among the moves they've made so far, what says this team is on a march back to the Super Bowl, other than just relying on the quarterback to get you there again? It's a really, really difficult pick to understand.
Put this pick in perspective of another pick that was maybe a little bit surprising in the first round. And the one pick that I'm thinking of is the Damon Arnett pick at corner for the Raiders at 19.
Well, the thing about Damon Arnett, though, is he's a really good player. And, you know, he is a good player. The reasons why he was never really in the first round conversation is there was a lot of talk that he'd not taken his combine training seriously. That he, you know, there was DeAndre Baker a year ago who went in the late first round, and he was the same kind of guy. You know, they didn't take the combine training seriously. But watching him on tape, he's so physical. He covers well. He can cover the slot. He can cover outside. And although it was a surprising pick, he's a really good player. And the Raiders desperately needed a cornerback. So you can kind of piece it together and say, look, maybe they took him a round too early or whatever, but they needed that. And he's a good player. I think that the thing with the Seahawks is, like, if they just had this, if everything was fine and they just had a glaring need at linebacker, like, let's say that they'd brought back Clowney and signed Everson Griffin and signed a defensive tackle and got Quinton Dunbar and maybe done everything they've done on offense as well, but they'd cut KJ Wright, let's say, in order to make all of this happen. If they then plug in Jordan Brooks, you go, okay, I get it. Yeah. You know, there's some logic to the decision there. But they've done it the other way around. They've kept KJ Wright. They've not addressed the pass rush. They've not really done anything to majorly improve the offense. And they've still drafted Jordan Brooks. So, you know, I feel like I want to fast forward to this time tomorrow just so we know what they've done in round two and three, because I just have a hard time. This was the biggest investment this team has made this offseason is to, on a linebacker. Nobody saw that coming. Nobody saw that coming.
No, even in a year where we tell ourselves that John Schneider and Pete Carroll will do something that we probably don't expect, even with that in mind, they did something that we didn't expect.
but you know, I get a sense, though, I don't know if other people feel this, that people are starting to question this a little bit. You know, it was always a bit quirky that the Seahawks always zig when others zag, and the Seahawks are going to keep you guessing in the draft, and they're going to do things differently. And while they were winning and having all of the success and everything like that, people went along with it. They've not hit on draft picks in the early rounds at all for a while. I mean, if you want to call Afedi a success because he played every game, then fine. But then, you know, you've got Afedi, you've got McDowell, you've got Penny, and you've got Collier, and now you've got Jordan Brooks. And eventually, people are going to start saying, hang on a minute, Russell Wilson's in his 30s now, and this team is not any closer than it was in, you know, between 2015 and now. They've not looked like getting back to the Super Bowl, really. They've been a good team, but not a great team. They're a top 10 team, but they're not a top 4 team. And eventually the patience is going to run thin, and people are going to go, when are you actually going to put this team in a position to actually get back to the Super Bowl? And I don't think the moves this offseason so far are doing that. But, you know, I'm almost at a point now, Brandon, where I want them to come back tomorrow and just say, we're going all out on defense. Go and draft two defensive linemen at 59. And then you've added three players to your front seven. And at least then you can say, well, they've addressed the defensive front seven and they've gone for that.
Yeah.
And I can understand that. And they've gone for youth and defense and fine. But if they come back tomorrow and it's a receiver and it's, you know, some obscure other pick of some kind, then you're just going to end up thinking, well, hang on a minute. You know, what is the plan to get back to a Super Bowl here?
Well, Rob, let's close it out on a positive note. What was one of your favorite moves that you saw from elsewhere in the NFL in the first round of the draft?
Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You know, he's one of the 20 best players in the draft.
And the Super Bowl champions got him at the end of round one.
And the team that, you know, is probably the most creative on offense has now added to go with Tariq Hill and Kelce and Mahomes and Sammy Watkins and Hardman and all of those guys. They've added one of the most physical, most explosive, most talented running backs who also can energize your offense with his runs. He can score from any position. He can beat you up inside or outside, but he's also an amazing pass catching back. I mean, he's an ideal fit for that offense. It is an outstanding pick. You know, there are just some teams that are getting it, and you know, the Chiefs have drafted very well. I mean, he just, you know, look at the picks that they've made over the years, and they've built up an extremely talented core. They're in the process of, you know, they kind of flirt with the cap a little bit. You know, they're on the very edge of the cap space there.
Yeah, they're right there.
But they still get it. And it's just, you know, when you think about 27, you know, I know we're wrapping things up, but Jordan Brooks or, you know, Yannick Ngakoue, or, you know, could you have done a trade for him, or Chris Jones, or...
Well, you know, while we're talking about the Chiefs and Chris Jones, did you know Jones was taken at 37 overall, and six picks ahead of him was Jermaine Ifedi in that draft?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And that's just another thought. You know, it's just another thought that, you know, 27 was an asset.
Yeah.
And you kind of feel like you don't want to trade it for an expensive veteran, because that you ideally you move back and you get the picks and you find the strong areas in the draft and you do things like that. And the Seahawks haven't done that. You know, they've used the pick. They haven't moved down. And they've drafted a guy that nobody expects them to draft. But look, I wish him well, you know, and I'd hate for him to somehow stumble across, you know, the blog or this video or somebody knows do that and think that it's something against him. It's not, you know, it's not. It's just, you know, we all of us who watch the Seahawks want the team to be back in the Super Bowl. And it's hard to understand how the move so far enabled them to do that.
And like you said, two picks coming at the end of round two and another pick at the end of round three. So three more picks to talk about tomorrow. And yeah, if we see defensive heavy draft for the Seahawks, I think it will start, at least put a picture together of where they're going to try and go. And it's going to be trying to find youthful talent on the defensive side of the ball, especially spending heavily on the offense. So that's going to be something to watch tomorrow.
Certainly is, and I will look forward to round two and three.
He's Rob Staton, SeahawksDraftBlog.com, and we're going to be watching rounds two and three on Friday to see what the Seahawks do moving forward. A lot more left to go with six Seahawks draft picks left on the board. We'll see if they do any wheeling and dealing throughout the rest of the draft and either get more picks or maybe even get fewer picks and maybe find a few more impact players. Definitely going to be something to watch. And with that said, there's only one thing left to say. Go Hawks!